Hey, welcome back to the Out of Spec podcast. I'm here with Kyle, Mike, and Ben. I'm Jordan. We are the OG squad, and we've been busy. First of all, I want to talk about some of the things we've been driving, which is never in short supply. Ben, I heard some rumors about a GT2 RS.
Yes, I had the pleasure of driving a Porsche GT2 RS about a mile and a half at best.
What year was it? 2020?
2021? No, it's a 991. Didn't check. Yeah, 991.2. It could have been a 19, maybe. Probably 19, most likely. My only takeaway from it, other than it's an absurdly cool thing with lots of wings and carbon and red Alcantara headliner and steering wheel.
I don't like the red.
It's a look. It's an aesthetic choice, to say the least. But carbon bucket seats, always loving.
But can you spec a GT2 without the red? Because I've only ever seen them in red interior.
I've only seen two. Yeah. So like I have a sample size, it's pretty small.
But both had red?
Yes. Well, no, I think one was black. One was black.
Oh, okay.
One was so all black, everything. You can't. The red headliner's a lot.
If you pay enough money, Porsche will let you do whatever you want.
That's true. They will.
True. I spent this icon to like 300 grand. So
that's a heavy options build.
I didn't know you could go up above like 250.
I think it was like 260 something, but you know, round up inflation. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Some taxes and whatnot.
It's the tax credit. Think of the fuel savings.
Yeah. Exactly. That's how you appeal to that buyer, I think, who's spending $170,000 on a car. $7,500 tax credit. Boom.
So do you want a GT2 RS now?
I do, because mostly due to the drive mode choices of this vehicle. I was going to ask, has anyone been in one and seen the drive modes available to the driver?
I've not.
How many do you think it has? How many different drive modes?
Well, I would hope it would have zero, and it's just Sport Plus all the time because it's GT2, but I don't know.
That's exactly what it was.
Finally, someone got this correct. It should just be in Sport Plus all the time.
It has no drive mode, so you have your exhaust button. You've got traction off, ESP and traction off combination button. And then there's PDK Sport, just to put it in like sport automatic shifting if you want it to be, if you're not in manual, essentially. But that's it. There's no dial on the thing. No Sport, Comfort, Normal, Sport Plus, Individual. I did not explore the limits of this vehicle's capability. I should specify.
That could be really dangerous if you did.
Yes. It feels fast. And there's no doubt it's fast. I don't think anyone's questioning that aspect of it.
Sounds like a car I could road trip around the country.
Yeah. Awesome. Easy. Yeah. and you can do the wingless thing, which is cool. People are doing that now, where they take the wings off of them and they just put the little finisher on the rear ducktail spoiler. And it's like ultimate, I don't want to call it a sleeper, but kind of. I mean, it looks cool.
That thing is just insane, isn't it? I mean, it is about the most aggressive, hardcore Volkswagen Beetle you can spec.
It's the fastest Beetle they make, for sure. Like, it looks ridiculous. Carbon everywhere. You can have magnesium wheels. They're like 50 grand or something, I think. I've heard from some owners that certain dealers will not service them or put tires on them because they're afraid of the wheels.
Wow. Interesting. So enough about your polluting car. So Mike, I saw you make a poll on Twitter about some electric cars that I called you right after because I was very intrigued. And for those of you who don't know, Mike owns a Mini Cooper SE, of which he could sell very close to sticker and bag the tax credit. So What are you going to buy now? Because that's what you just got to do.
Well, I mean, that is definitely a possibility. And as to what I'm going to buy, I don't know. I changed my mind a lot as to what the next car might be.
Yep. You have since I met you like 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I have a new car almost every year, I feel like, if not more
often. No, you used to get a new car every 3 months. Are you kidding me?
I was going to say, the last car I owned for a year or more might have been my last Mini.
Yeah,
actually,
the Volvo, right? That was a year.
I don't think I had that.
We got service. It had an oil change, which is unusual.
But I think I put a lot of miles on the Volvo. I actually drove that to Connecticut twice.
From North Carolina.
Yeah, from North Carolina. Yeah, when I moved here is when I bought the Volvo and sold my first Tesla. But anyway, as far as what I'm thinking about buying, well, the Ioniq 5 is obviously on the list, and then I was like, oh, the EV6 gets kind of like a cooler interior. Like I might be a little nicer, maybe the interior. I like the black bezel around the screens more than the white, but the Ioniq 5 looks way cooler on the outside. Though after seeing an EV6 in person, I thought it actually looked pretty good compared to what the photos show.
What color did you see the EV6 in?
Yacht blue.
Oh, so I saw a silver one today when we were live streaming with the Maverick, and it, I've been going back and forth. It doesn't look good.
No, I think the darker colors were because Ben and I saw
black was black okay.
Blue. Yeah, black looked pretty good. But I don't know. And then I always go back to Polestar too because I like Volvos and Polestar is very Volvo-y. And
you're such a Polestar guy. You're not road tripping this thing. You're not going to get the benefit of the 800 volt tech. Polestar already has insane thermal management when you drive it hard, and you can option the new track mode software to do like actual oversteer on the rear axle.
Yeah, I know. And that's another thing. When I was looking, I'm like, man, you can just get the performance pack because they're going to have that over-the-air update that you can get. And then you have way more horsepower and basically like a Tesla-ish kind of style track mode.
So, wait, did I miss something?
About what? Polestar?
It's like track mode for Polestar? Like a performance,
it's not. I don't think like it's a mode, software. Is it?
It just makes it more aggressive to the rear. It's not oversteer is it?
So, Ben, remember
can I slide it? That's my only question.
Yes, you can now slide it.
You should be able to,
On pavement?
Yes.
Sold. Buy it now.
Ooh, I'm interested.
I mean, at least that it will neutralize it.
Okay, well, it's a we'll little different, test it. But sure.
No, but I think you probably can slide it. You used to be able to chuck it into a corner, get it sideways. You know, with even with ESC Sport, it lets you have your fun. And then when you go throttle, it was 50-50, 150 kilowatts each, so 400 and something horsepower. And so it would just kind of like, feels just so awkward. And when you come out of a corner without opposite lock being induced, you just understeer because the rear isn't helping. Now all of the extra performance is exclusively on the back.
Mm-hmm.
So this that's all you deal. Need. It's exactly when I reviewed that car, I said, it's perfect. Give me another 50 horsepower on the back axle. I don't know what the number is, but they gave me some.
And to those who did see my poll and vote on it, thank you. I think it almost has 800 votes, first of all. And I am really sorry for leaving out the Mach-E. I did not mean to.
Are you feeling the wrath of Mach-E owners?
There's been a lot of people who said, oh, Mach-E, the Consumer Reports most recommended car, Mach-E.
Oh, God, you got to be kidding me.
So I was like, I'm sorry, I did not mean to leave it out. And I knew I was forgetting one, but we were kind of talking about it at work, and it just slipped my mind. Like, that's the only reason those cars were on it that were on it, because those were already in discussion.
It's a good car. It just has not good thermal management and terrible brake feel, which are two things you would need in an EV.
Yeah, and I agree. The brake feel one for sure. Like everyone seems to write about that. And I trust your review of it.
According to Mach-E owners, it's not accurate.
But
actually, no, a lot of people are like, yeah, the brakes are weird. And the Maverick kind of has this weird brake strategy too.
But I always go back to the Polestar too. And that's more than likely going to be the one that I would end up buying off of that poll in reality.
I love Polestar too. I saw one in Dallas. A couple days ago with Colorado plates, and I thought that was kind of cool.
You can road trip them, Jordan. They are very
how did they get them from Colorado to Dallas? Because you can't go to Amarillo, I don't think, on one charge. Maybe, but it's not very efficient.
I don't know.
It could be a front wheel drive one. They get slightly better range, so I don't know what the distance is, but maybe they could be very efficient. I don't know. Have you driven a front wheel drive one?
No.
I don't know if I want to.
Kyle doesn't drive front-wheel drive EVs.
If they just made it a rear-wheel drive one, I would just buy that. But
Is the most frustrating thing to me. No one else cares. Everyone else like, oh, front-wheel drive is fine, but I totally
disagree. I strongly care about it. But I also wish the Mini was rear-wheel drive. Like that would have been I know that's the opposite of Mini's whole like historic situation, but like, I don't care. It would be more fun.
I just want a dual motor Mini Cooper SE with 600 horsepower.
Like, why is this car great?
And it can still be 35 kilowatt hours. GT. That's fine.
And they're good. Timeout's going to fix them. We have a 20-minute timer, so it's just going to happen all show. The lights in this building. Everything is amazing about this building in our office. We love it. The people are great. The lights suck. They keep turning off. We can't figure out how to keep them on. I've asked everyone. No one knows.
What about a ceiling fan? Or an oscillating fan that would move.
Yeah,
that
so we need to just have Ellie over there and send her some treats and she'll wag her tail.
Yeah. So I guess we'll get to the Chicago Auto Show and stuff, Kyle did in Michigan later, but I wanted to briefly mention we had the GMC Canyon. Is that what it's called?
The truck that always know what it's called, the car we reviewed.
Yeah.
The Canyon is the Colorado, basically.
It always escapes my mind that it exists until I see one. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's a good Ford. we did have a close call, and I had some PTSD because we were on the highway on the way to the airport for me and Kyle to fly out.
PTSD.
And a car nearly ran us off the highway. Of course.
Wow, you guys are like magnets over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Timon was driving. He's like, I got it. And he wasn't braking. And it was like this close.
I was like, there's an Audi in our lane with us. It was kind of freaky. But yeah, Kyle, what'd you think of that truck?
Nice truck, no towing pack, which I thought was interesting. Don't send pickup trucks here without towing receivers on them, in my opinion. So I thought that was a little bit of a shame. If a Ford Maverick can come with a tow hitch, your GMC Canyon AT4 can. I thought it was interesting spec because it was all off-roady. So it was max off-road for the Canyon. And perhaps they didn't spec the trailer hitch for better break or departure angle. Could be something I would think of. So it had the factory installed leveling kit. Raises the front up a little bit, which I thought was interesting.
Nice.
It's not factory installed, dealer installed. It also had the dealer installed running boards that weren't running boards, they're rock sliders. It had different wheels. It had, I mean, it looked really chunky. The thing looked amazing. Do we have a picture of it anyway, Jordan?
Did you post a picture on Twitter? I thought you had it.
Anyway, the engine was the 3.6 liter V6 with 8 gears, and it just loves to rev. You just need to sit at 7,000 RPM for the thing to move up here at altitude. It's a little choked. But I thought it drove great. It was an unbelievably quiet on the highway. Like, you know, compared to a Ford Ranger, this is a much better road tripping car, in my opinion. And we had both the off-roading versions of each recently. So really, really enjoyed it. Did not like the red.
Was that a
no fault of the car?
Or was this like an actual press car?
Yeah, it was a media car.
Okay. Yeah. I was curious. A lot of rental. The only reason I ask is a lot of rental spec trucks like that do not get tow hitches because they don't want you towing with them.
Interesting.
So I'm judging by that picture, I'm like, I couldn't tell like if it was like a Hertz car or something.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't the most exciting thing we've ever driven or reviewed, but it was an interesting experience to see where they're at. It felt very old school. It had a physical key you had to put in, and it just feels like it's due for an update with all the new GM stuff.
And the new Frontier. I mean, the new Frontier felt that
Smokes
way
it.
For a long time. So,
Smokes
and
it.
Now I'd be hard pressed not to buy a new Frontier, to be honest. So.
I would buy a Frontier over a Tacoma personally, especially.
Yeah, I probably would.
They look so good. They drive
so well.
They do
look nice.
And there's nothing wrong with this. I mean, look, if you're going and you're buying a truck, they're hard to get. It's fine. It's going to be reliable.
And they're really, really reliable.
Yeah, they've proven themselves. It just didn't do anything for me. Like, what's the use of a truck without a trailer hitch? It was just a weird spec. And
now, does it seem odd that General Motors is admitting that it's not level by offering a leveling kit? I find that funny. Why not just?
I think it's because it's not a towing truck. So normally they would have front rake so you can load it, and then it sits even with payload.
Yeah, but everyone levels their truck these days. So,
well, you in North Carolina really level your truck
in the wrong way.
Well, they take that level and they just get six of them. They stack it in the front. Double up, triple up.
Look, I don't mind a little bit of a squat. I like the way when it sags a little bit in the rear. I think it looks good, but we're talking 1 or 2 degrees, not staring at the moon.
Oh, I met someone, believe it or not, who had a squatted truck.
Really?
What they squatted?
Cool. Huh? Were they cool?
Not particularly, but for one reason they were. They had gone through the effort of leveling their headlights to work
past
with the squat, which was automatically cool, I thought.
Yep.
I disagreed with about everything that was happening there. However, it was not impacting other road users negatively.
Exactly. They did it without the detriment to everyone else.
Well, unless someone's in front of you and you don't see them and run them over.
Well, pedestrians aside, at least other road users are, you know, cared for. He's like, he said, I'm not some idiot. I leveled the headlights. And I was like, oh, really? I don't think I've ever seen anyone do that before.
I love how he prefaced that with, I'm not some idiot.
Yeah. That's how you know.
He did. I think he could, well, there's different stages of stupidity, I guess.
Yeah. He's on that. That's a very respectful.
Maybe he should have said, I'm not a complete idiot.
Right.
That's what I would have said. Yeah.
I hate to admit it, but I kind of like the squatted truck thing. I think it's funny.
It's illegal now, so you don't see them anymore, really.
Really? Did they actually enforce them? Like, Wilmington was full of these things.
Well, we haven't been to Wilmington since it became illegal, so I don't know. But I've not seen any around Raleigh, where we live.
You know, I think everyone finally put in the second half of their lift kit, it seems.
They're all
usually they sell a set of four. I mean, they didn't used to sell you two corners at a time.
Dang. Well, yeah, let's see. What else did we do? Well, we took that to the airport. I could just go in chronological order.
Yeah, let's just go in chronological order.
Took it to the airport.
I like it.
Yeah, took it to the airport, and that's where we went to Chicago. And speaking of Frontier, we were there with sort of Nissan, which is interesting because they were showing.
Nissan invited us to come look at some trucks they'll never sell to the public.
Correct.
Oh,
which
like,
I thought was a real useful.
Like Safari Easter egg thing that they do.
So it was. They have three special editions of Frontier.
Yes.
This one is awesome.
That one's badass. Cool.
That
looks like Expedition Overland, except incredible. Those roads appear to be paved highways on it.
Yes.
Nice. I did not catch that.
It's really cool American, like North American map on it with all these red lines. And that's definitely the U.S. interstate system and not some sort of like Oregon Trail or something more interesting.
Why did we not think about this? That's so funny.
Oh my God.
Yeah. We're like, oh, so rugged.
I just saw South Carolina. I'm like, that's I-95 right there.
You know? We made a joke in our TikTok about how I-25 is the B pillar of this entire truck.
Right. So we're the strongest point.
Yeah, there was this one. And then this one, which was Project 72X, I think they call it or something.
Mike,
yeah.
You want to know a cool thing that you'll appreciate about this truck?
This is sitting on the steel for those listening. That's all that you need to know. And it's got like retro stripes.
They're OEM.
Four spare tires from a Frontier, painted them white and slapped them on this thing.
Nice.
That was what they did.
Yep. Isn't that awesome?
What Calvin, the Taycan project manager guy, did with his LX? I think he told me they're Tundra spare wheels.
Possible.
That he just painted the color that they are.
That's the way to go.
That thing is awesome. That would sell all day if they would actually make that package.
Why don't they actually do that?
Well, they do in other markets because we had that whatever Navarro thing was.
That was technically still batches of Frontier. Yep.
Oh, what?
But it was not the Frontier we get because it was like a 2.8 liter four cylinder diesel.
Those wheels are awful.
This was hard body.
You don't like the hard body wheels?
The wheels are true to era, what they were going after, the original hard body.
They designed, engineered, machined, and produced these wheels in-house at Nissan Design America. And they made it sound like that was really exciting. But then I realized, aren't they supposed to be designing the entire car there?
Theoretically, they do this with all of their wheels.
Someone else did. No. But
I don't know. Those ones aren't doing it for me. The last one, though, the gray with the 4x4 and the white steelies. Yep, that one right
there. What's that one called?
This was Project 72X, which is all based around the old Datsun 720.
Amazing. So
that was, simplicity. I really
would buy
it. Love it.
I like that one a lot. That's the spec I would order if I could.
I just want LEDs on it.
I want
Matrix LEDs.
But I want everything else based like
that. Well, they also unveiled a new color of the Z called Boulder Gray.
That's cool.
Looks pretty good.
Best color.
Yeah. Yep. Just saw a bunch of things there. Of course, we saw the new Bronco Raptor.
Chunky
boy, and then the Ford's big unveil at the show was the Everglades Bronco, which is just a Bronco with a winch and a snorkel.
Wait, but you can't actually.
But it's green.
No, you can't.
It's
buy
green.
It, it is only for Bronco reservation holders to swap their order to this, which I don't think increases their chances of getting a car sooner.
Nope.
Okay.
Wait, so you can just so if you already have a Bronco on order, you can choose to have a more expensive one on order now.
Yes.
Is basically what you can do.
I would probably do that because I think that looks really cool.
I mean, if it comes with all the kit on it, I get it.
Yeah.
It's got the stuff I like, and it's green.
Yeah, the green. Snorkel is really
the most important part.
I would go for it. I just don't like the wheels, but I like that.
What's the waiting depth of Bronco? Do we know this yet?
If with the engine off, all you can give it.
Okay. With a winch, as deep as you need it to go.
That's great. Yeah, we saw the Allen Mann GT. That was nice.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Copy of Shmi.
Yep. He's bitter. And then finally rode in the Illuminator that me and Kyle have been following this thing around the entire country and finally got to ride in the F100 Illuminator, which was, I didn't realize till later on, it was really showcasing their new E-Crate motor. So you can buy.
How did we see this at like a million shows and not really get what it was about?
They never said what it was about. They were just like, look at this thing. And we're like, cool, it's got a Mach-E inside of it. Yeah. But it's an E-Crate motor, which is super cool. You can buy it off the shelf. Cool. It's available online at FordPerformanceParts.com right now. I was like, I could throw that in my Miata.
Same with your 5-second limitation at max power.
Yeah.
I don't know that to be true. Don't quote me on that.
All the performance you could want. But yeah, so this is pretty cool because it was still real drive though, right?
It did a massive freaking burnout. We just roasted the tires on this thing and it was awesome. This is it was rad. It was amazing to me, more so the integration of how they put in 100 kilowatt-hour battery pack in this thing. Stock Mach-E, everything is Mach-E, shifter, screen, seats, it's all factory. We have a full video of it on Out of Spec Reviews. And got to ride around in it at a maximum speed of about 25 miles an hour.
Yes.
And you
did a burnout. That's the more complete aspect of the
test. That is the spec.
And Ford sourced this from an existing customer in Texas. They bought their old 78 F100 and then did all this to it. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Have you done a podcast since the Chicago Auto Show?
Nope.
Wow.
No. Yep. Because we didn't have a crew. We didn't get to do a crew one last week.
Huh.
Targa Supra, if it just had a manual, I would already own it. Silverado EV. Yes. This was first time.
We just go back and say that fixes everything with the Supra that I don't like.
Yes.
That's really good. Yeah. I really like that a lot, actually.
Honestly, I'd take it with the automatic and be happy to be.
Great wing.
I would still be happy with this, yeah. Silverado EV, we finally saw it in person. 24-inch wheels.
24.
Largest wheels 25. On a production vehicle.
Yeah, that's something else.
Unbelievable.
Is that a 24-inch wheel on this image we're looking at? Yep. The kind of swirly design?
You know what's amazing is we're talking about 24-inch wheels, but it also has like a 200-plus kilowatt-hour battery pack. It can tow 20,000 pounds when properly equipped, and it can charge it up to 350 kilowatts.
Yeah. So it's just a Hummer EV, but you're less socially obnoxious.
Yes, this is a way better Hummer EV, I think.
I think this looks really good. I love the Avalanche look to it, which some people don't. I know there's a lot of controversy around them making this unibody instead of body on frame, but I think it works. I mean, looks good. So, I don't know.
And you can...
That is just Hummer EV bits, right? Is it as big as Hummer EV?
It's not as wide, I don't think.
No, it's not
as... But it is like hefty.
I don't know to be true that it has the same battery pack, because the specs for the Hummer EV battery pack were just released at like 240 kilowatt hour gross and 213 usable, something like that. The pack weighs 3,000 pounds almost.
Yep.
It's off real lightweight.
But back to the Silverado.
That's unsafe to people in its vicinity, unfortunately.
What I thought
Can
was
you imagine when the first one of those burns? That's going to be tough.
Hopefully it doesn't happen. But I want to hear more about the Silverado.
So Silverado EV, they were so protective of this thing and they wouldn't let us near it because we had to get in line. But then for us to get in line, we couldn't film anything else at the show because everyone else was in line. And then when we did show up, when there was no line, the one person in the entire company who's allowed to open the doors was eating lunch. So
they had one person who was allowed, trained to open the door.
Yes, trained to open the door. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, but they had.
But it does have this cool bed pass through to the cab situation.
Yeah, the Avalanche
job security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
it's that guy convinced everyone he was the only one qualified to do that job.
Yeah,
he was a cool guy. I just think it was quite silly that we're like, hey, we're here. Can we like film this thing? And then no one was around to say yes.
I really wish they had called this Avalanche because it doesn't look like the Silverado. I mean, this should have, yeah,
Should have been the Avalanche.
Yep. That would have been cool.
Silverado is a stronger. And they could have called it the Avalanche, too. I mean, right there.
Avalanche.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Walking through Lexus.
What else do we see there?
I really liked this setup. It was being towed by the new LX.
Yes, because Lexus has such a deep-rooted history in racing.
I know. I was like, driving. What? And then, of course, I just love this thing everywhere I see the Toyo Concept LC500.
I can hear the exhaust note from here.
EV9. I love seeing this thing. I don't know when they'll make it, but
for our listener audience, it's a box.
It's just a box on triangle wheels.
It kind of looks like a boxier Fisker Ocean.
So you know what's funny about this is every car at the auto show, we did a whole like hour-long tour. We were checking to see if the caps were straight or not. But since this one has triangle wheels, you actually can't center them. The caps so they're also triangular.
That would kind of annoy me, actually.
Yeah, it was odd.
It was fun though, walking around seeing who actually centered their wheel caps.
Ford centered.
Oh, the logo, you mean?
Yeah, the logo. Yep.
Oh, so like they well, so there's orientations. Do you know if these brands have specific orientations, or were they orienting them level when the car is
level?
Parked?
Level.
Because like I know Tesla and Porsche. Well, Tesla used to care about this; they do not anymore. But the rule was you had the bottom of the T or the bottom of the Porsche crest pointing towards the valve stem on the tire. On the wheel.
Remember that? All pointed level.
Not that.
Okay. So everyone's given up on that whole thing, I guess, at this point.
This thing was pretty wild to see.
It's the new, basically, M3 with every M Performance parts and the ugliest exhaust system.
I was going to say that exhaust is hideous.
Yes.
I really want to look at it. I'm sick.
Yeah.
Then again, that's what the new M3 does. It makes you sick anyway.
What would have made me like it more? If instead of at a diagonal angle, there were just two. Like vertical stacks, like a quad square, like the Pagani Huayra in the back.
What was wrong with where they were?
Good.
So not only do you, when you spec this exhaust, it's like $7,000. I'm just making up. No, it's got to be expensive.
It's got to be expensive.
Then you got to spec the carbon rear diffuser because that's the only diffuser that fits these tailpipes.
And if you do that, you're going to have to spec the carbon side skirts to match. So
right.
Yeah, of course.
Here's the thing about the M3 though, and it might be controversial. I think it's the best looking BMW ever from the back. Mm. Not this particular one, but I love it.
Okay. I can see because it's better than the F80.
I think I liked F80 more. The rear fender flares were more aggressive looking to me.
I always, because I back when I had my F80 M3, would always turn around and look at that car. That was that was almost perfection for a sedan.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. The thing is nice. But then now they all just, now I get turned off every time I see one because they all have burble tunes and they're all farting going down the street and they're all driven
they
by 18.
They all have Instagram tabs on the.
Yeah. What's up with this? Every time I go by and I see an Instagram on the side of the car, I'm like, ugh, I do not want any part of that.
Especially if their username is like their car, like J-F-A-D-M-3. Yeah. So
it's on every single car.
It really is. It's everywhere now. And it's on like pedestrian cars too. Like,
I guess I won't show you my Instagram tag on my thing.
Yeah, don't show us that.
What was the least impressive car you saw at the auto show?
Do we have a picture of it, Jordan?
Presumably.
Oh, they know. They've agreed.
Subaru normally does a great job, but not this time.
Did they not have that crazy studio thing?
No, that Subaru had a great display.
Great display. Puppies, the whole bit, but they turned their wheels all the wrong way. So when you look at the car, you look at tire and not wheel.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird.
Yes, and they were all that way.
Like the new WRX was there, I'm assuming.
New WRX was there, wheels the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I still think
the last gen STI is the best thing ever.
Yes, because the last one that they made up to 2021,
yep,
was still like perfect with the wheels, those acid green brake calipers.
Yep,
like the interior got actually pretty nice for what it was, and for the money. In reality, it was a bargain because it never really changed in price. It saved $40,000 the whole time for 12 years.
Classy car.
I believe the STI died when the hatch did. Okay. And I will hold to that.
Yeah, this is what we're talking about.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, it's the wrong way for viewing purposes. Yeah.
So I can maybe understand it with this display because it's like, oh, maybe it's, you know, drifting around this corner. But all their other cars were like this that were not looking at anything.
Yeah, but this display didn't even have roadway the whole time.
Yeah, it didn't. It was just kind of weird.
That's funky.
But Subaru's display was great. So I don't know if we caught it on film somewhere. I thought we did. The fact that there's a Chevy Spark on display, I thought was hilarious.
It's a little bit of a gas one. Oh, it's right there.
It's Miami Blue.
It was wonderful. It's the last new Spark I think I'll ever have the opportunity to sit in. Had 50 miles on it.
Yeah, because they've discontinued it, but it was still here. And it was hidden behind this wall. On the other side of this wall is a Silverado EV. So they hid it in the back corner of their display. They were like, hopefully right no one sees this.
Yeah. Yep. By the way, does anyone know, like, when's the last time you've seen a new Malibu?
I don't know.
Or I mean, is it an Impala? Kind of recently,
forget but that they still make the Malibu or Impala, whichever it's called now.
We saw a lot
of make both.
Old Malibus in Chicago.
I don't know. Anyway, Chicago Auto Show. We were in Chicago. It was cold. I hate Chicago. It was, but the cars were fun. The people were great.
Yeah.
Did you have deep dish pizza?
We did, and it was pretty. 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's no New York style or Connecticut style.
Oh, comparing to New York, it's like a 2 out of 10.
I agree. You're one camp or the other. So, and then, you and me are from New England. So that's just how it is.
So after the Chicago Auto Show, I went home, picked up a Land Rover Defender. I'll tell you about that in a second. But Jordan, you went crazy.
Yeah, let's see. What did I do? Basically waited for about 24 hours till Ahmad showed up, my friend. So I went to, you know, Chinatown, whatever you do in Chicago. And then Ahmad showed up the next day.
They're known for their pho. Did you get good pho?
I actually did ramen. They're known for good ramen.
Oh, that's what I meant to say.
Yeah, better. I got ramen and boba, and both were probably the best I've ever had in my life. So good experience. Nice. Yep. And then a lot of Asian people are very outgoing, which I love. Like, I feel like too many Americans just keep to themselves. I was just sitting in this ramen or this boba shop editing my road trip video, and this little girl walks up and she's like trying to understand what the heck I'm doing, and I'm trying to explain how video editing works, and she's like trying to understand it. It was so wild. But then the next day, Ahmad, my friend, flew up to Green Bay from Dallas to buy his EV6 or take delivery of an EV6. He finally found one at MSRP, no markup whatsoever, which was great. And it's a Wind all-wheel drive edition. And so we took that. He picked the car up and then drove down, picked me up in Chicago because I was on his direct route home. And then we drove 1,000 miles to Dallas with an EV6, which was interesting because it was my first CCS road trip and his first EV experience ever, just at all. So he had never even driven a Tesla. I mean, he had just sat in a Tesla once. I think I took him around in Kyle's one time, but that was, yeah. So that was pretty interesting. Got to spend a lot of time with the EV6, and I really am conflicted on what I like more, Ioniq 5 or EV6. I think it depends on the trim level, honestly. mid-spec, I would go EV6. High-spec, I would go Ioniq 5. But it's a great car. It was super comfortable and interesting, you know, raw road trip charging experience. Technically every single, well, there's a couple of EA chargers that like weren't working, but we never had to like leave an EA charging location to go find a different one. And there was also the learning curve with how, you know, I knew that you can tell at the top of the charger what number it is, but it's not very obvious. And I had even forgotten that initially because I just,
can you explain a little bit? Because our audience may never have never used this before.
Yeah. So on the top of an EV, of an Electrify America charger is almost like a VIN, like just a string of characters. And at the very end, you'll see -01, 02, 03.
It's a serial number of location. And then there's a number after a hyphen that indicates the charger number at that particular installation.
Yep. Which I had known that. And then I guess I had gone almost a year without using CCS, so I forgot. And then Ahmad was like, yeah, I can't get it to work on my phone. Like he was trying to activate the charger from his phone. And he was looking at the little number next to the charge handle, which I didn't realize this, but I was like, wait, that's really intuitive. That's how it should be. But that's only how they say, you know, they basically have one and two on each unit. So finally, a little bit later, we're like, oh, wait, he was like, yeah, this one's on the app says it's 150, but we're plugged into a 350. And that's when it clicked in my head. I was like, oh, we're doing this all wrong. So then it worked fine. Although we had a couple of issues with like 150. We had a 150 that was only giving us 50 kilowatts and it wasn't cold. And then we switched to another 150 and then it gave us 150 kilowatts. So just issues with their charging speed, honestly, but no actual charger outages.
But that wasn't very common that you ran into that. You had a lot of charging speed issues, but not because of Electrify America.
No, most of our charging speed issues were just directly related to the cold. It was 10 degrees when we left Chicago. Ooh. And so very, very cold, not great in our efficiency, and obviously not great with charging. Of course, the next day, as we got closer to Texas, charging was a lot better. Although then we got into Francis Energy in Oklahoma, which, you know, if you take, like, Ahmad took his EV6 to Electrify America 150 station, and it was pulling 175. Easy. But then we go to, like, a 200 kilowatt Francis charger, and it'll max out at, like, 175. So it, like, undercuts it.
And yeah, then, so basically those chargers are probably rated at 1,000 volts, mm-hmm. 200 kilowatt would be my guess. Yeah. I don't know, though. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not positive. And we checked all around Oklahoma, just clicked on random chargers on their app, which their app is not very great to check charger speed. You have to, like, do 3 or 4 clicks in each station to find the actual charging rate of the charger. But everyone we checked was 200. So we're like, okay, that's great.
Well, I guess we're not getting that Francis Energy sponsorship we were banking on then. which was actually something we were working with them with. But now if it doesn't actually work, I don't want to do anything.
Yeah, I was very hyped to use them because you had a good experience. And it could just be that we were on a slightly – it was still a relatively major route, but not the major
route. But route doesn't determine chargers. A charger is a charger.
Yeah.
The only thing where they might be derated is in small towns. They may not have the power available to the units.
Yeah. So, and then our last charging stop, yeah, we went to actually one charger just didn't work at all. We tried all 4 stations and none of them would work. And then we tried calling them and just voicemail. It was like, you have reached the voicemail. I was like, this is like someone's personal voicemail. And it was the number on the machine.
Jordan, I don't think, so we talked about on your trip, you had a lot of cold weather related issues. What do you think would have made the trip better? What would you recommend that Kia does to improve their car?
Definitely just battery preconditioning.
Not even route planning. Did you find the lack of route planning not helpful?
That would have been convenient, but we used a better routeplanner.com, whatever the website is.
Yeah,
which worked pretty much the same way. And I think I like the, like, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto just fine. So it's like, if we're already using that, I'm fine with using our phones to do the route planning.
But it's really difficult in that scenario because for preconditioning, the car would
need the car nav.
Yeah.
The car nav, which then you can't use Apple Maps if it's plugged in.
So that's, if there was some way to, like, fully integrate that, that would be perfect. But if we would use the car one, hands down, if it had preconditioning, like, we would have done anything to be preconditioned.
Only getting 70 kilowatts when you were plugging in, which is brutal.
Yeah. Yeah, it would like kind of get up to 100 every once in a while, but it was never really above 60 or 70.
And what's the car rated for? 235, right?
Yeah. So
does it not precondition at all with the built-in navigation then?
Nope.
Or would that have helped that trip?
No, it makes no difference. The only thing
it has no preconditioning. The winter mode thing?
Winter mode would be the only thing, but no one's convinced truly what it even does yet.
Yeah, we couldn't figure it out.
So it's supposed to drive with winter mode on or off out of curiosity?
We drove with winter mode on, which the winter mode thing says it should improve the battery performance in winter.
Yeah.
That's
which would mean it could charge better and it would be more efficient.
Yeah. So, and it didn't help charging or efficiency.
But also, I think there were some other issues here, which you kind of knew what to do, but Ahmad was a new owner of the car too. And, like, you got to stomp this thing to warm it up. Like, a couple hard accelerations is not going to do anything. Like, you got to drive the crap out of it. What you really should have done was charged it up a lot longer at the first initial charging stop and then just wailed on that thing for like 2 hours, like wide open, full regen, wide open, full regen, like to the point where you're puking. And then it probably could have kept itself warm the rest of the trip.
Yeah.
But then you stayed in a hotel without a charger and everyone gave you crap for it in the video.
Yep.
That was dumb.
I did see that.
So my vote was to stay in St. Louis, but he really wanted to get as far as possible and do a much shorter drive the next day. And so that left like a weird 3 hour, like we either
Cape Girardeau.
Yeah. So all the hotels.
EVTV is in Cape Girardeau.
Yeah. So that was our preference, but there were no hotels in the range that we were looking to stay. So we did find a hotel right next to EA. So we just
should have charged it at night and then went to bed.
Should have charged it at night, but we got there.
Road tripping 101.
Yeah. Well, first road trip ever for us. So that's a learning curve.
You made it.
It was a genuinely good raw first impression.
It definitely was.
It was interesting to me because a lot of these, like we talk about charging curves and all this stuff. And like, so my impression is, okay, you are insanely tech focused. You got it down. No question. Like you're good to go. Same with Ahmad. He's tech focused. He's got this foldable phone thing I've never seen. Like you guys are not normal. You're the 1% nerds. Mm-hmm. And even you had issues figuring out what charger to activate and potentially why is the car derating and troubleshooting and not charging at hotels, but that's just pure stupidity, not because you're nerds. It just really seemed like a really interesting glimpse into how nuanced EV road tripping is and how early days this really is.
Yeah, which is funny because it doesn't feel like it should be early days because there's so many EVs out and about now. We saw a few, you know, we saw Rivian and Amaki at one charging spot. That was fun to talk to them. And that was though the annoying thing I think was just the location of the chargers. Every single charger we had to like walk half a mile to find food, and if it's 10 degrees it's terrible. And it was just, and even I never noticed because I always went to EA at Walmart's during the day. We were hitting a lot of the Walmart EAs after like 10 p.m. So their one door is locked, and it's always the door close to the EA state, the charger. So we had to walk all the way to the other side. We were like, this is so dumb.
Well, I remember road tripping during COVID times when everyone imagined that you would only get COVID at night. So they would shut down their stores or something stupid like that. And so basically I would road trip and then you'd be in the middle of a parking lot with nothing you can do. Yep. And I remember once I got to a parking lot in the middle of the night with a flat tire and a Porsche Taycan. And this was right before our Cannonball, and I had to sneak into a Walmart that was closing, purchase a tire thing. They were trying to kick me out. I'm like, please let me give you money for this. Like my car is broken. And it's like not late. It was like 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night or something. I don't actually remember. And the patch didn't work. I had to stay overnight anyway. But basically this was very awkward. And you know, for EA, it was very easy to partner with Walmart, I imagine, because they said, here, we got the power. We're a big store. We got the parking spaces. We got a restroom and something for your people to do. And what I think there was a missed opportunity, perhaps, you know, they had to get all these things installed really quickly. So, I mean, how much can you really fault them? I don't know. But like, Jordan, you were even saying, I'm fine with a Walmart if there's nothing else in town, right? If there's no Target, if there's no shopping center, if there's nothing like this, because in a lot of places, the only thing that is there is a Walmart in many parts of the country. And I'll take a Walmart over the middle of nowhere, but I would much rather have anything else.
Every single stop, it felt like we were exiting the highway, driving 2 miles off the highway, passing locations. We were like, that would be a great charger. That would be a great charger. That would be a great charger. And then we get to a Walmart with nothing around it. It's like, this is just not great. Our best charging experience was the Electrify America that was at a Casey's gas station. That was hands down the best.
I've been to that one before, and which was great because that was actually one of my best EA charging stops too. Because you know when you pointed at that field when you were leaving and you like read the sign?
Yep.
In that sign was a classic car show. So I plugged in the Kona Electric years ago, back when EA was brand new, and went to a car show, which was just really neat.
Wow.
And Mike, you have a CCS car, and Ben, you have a CCS car. So have you used the CCS infrastructure much around where you are?
Yeah, I've used it on the Mini once at a Walmart. That was it. Otherwise, at the mini.
No, it was the Target. At home.
Was it a Target? I don't know.
Yeah, we went to a more premium EA station.
Oh, yeah, it was a Target. Yeah,
and I can carry. It's a nice area.
That was our first. Walmart. That was our first EA was at a Target, and we walked in. We were like, "Ah, this is luxury." Went to the Chip and Joe section, looked at all that stuff. Yeah,
I mean, I know, yeah. Like just from being in road tripping, like EA stations at a Sheetz. I know Tesla usually has supercharged at Sheetz, but like that would make a lot of sense if you could get even just like 3 or 4 of them next to the Tesla stalls. You know, that'd be fine. Mm-hmm. Because Sheetz is a great spot for a charger.
Site selection is really tough, but Tesla's really done a great job with this.
Yeah, they have.
When you roll up to superchargers, they're always, I don't want to say always, because some...
We've been to a couple on the Eastern Coast that are questionable at night.
But remember
that one just north of Florida that's not lit at all at that mall? It's like under the... It was somewhere in Florida, I think. There's no lights. It's the back corner of the mall, and it was under like tree cover. So it's even darker at night.
I don't remember it, but it sounds about right. Even the Raleigh supercharger at night's a little weird.
Yeah, it is. It does, because it's on the backside of the
It's in the
Target.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, my biggest issue with EV road tripping, and this is the case for every automaker and every charging network, is there's no emergency release for the handle. And so I think there's a few like major glaring issues to me that maybe it's because I'm used to this and I've been road tripping EVs for as long as I can remember at this point. Ben, you remember when before CCS was really a thing, just when CCS was going in, we drove an early i3 across North Carolina to go to the Dragon, and it took 15 hours.
It took 15 hours to do a 4.5 hour drive, I think. Yeah.
So like this, that it's a lot better than it was back then. But
oh, it's so much better.
Still,
we had to use almost the entire battery to go up off our route to charge. Then use almost the entire battery to go back down on the route, but you couldn't actually make that gap. It was like 75 miles or something that we couldn't do. But if we went 60 miles out of the way twice, we could technically cover the distance.
And we did that. And then, which was even dumber, is we had the little fuel range extender.
We had a Rex in that car.
You just didn't want to use it. Yeah, you were trying to not use it.
It was the principle of
this. Was before we were YouTubing, but that would have been a great YouTube.
That would have been an amazing video.
The comments would have been amazing to read.
But I wish we could have documented what that was like, because that was early days. This was like when the first Tritium CCS 50 kilowatt chargers were going in.
Yeah, the really
screaming ones. And we went to one, we were like, wow, we've never seen one of these. And it was
so nice because it had a solar panel above it, which actually is still a nice thing these days. But it was in this, it was an electric co-op, I think Lenore,
North Carolina.
Something like that, North Carolina. And I think we walked down a busy street, like
a mile
to the nearest gas station to like get a water, and a mile back, and there's no sidewalks, and we're on the side of this like sketchy road.
But that was the fun. That was the early days. I mean, this is, but really enjoyed that stuff. And now it's like, okay, we've sort of progressed from that. But now there's some glaring issues where on multiple charging providers, even Tesla, you could just walk up to a car and hit the handle and stop charging. Or you can just touch a screen on some of these screen ones and stop charging. And if someone walks up to you and tries to rob you, which, by the way, remember Burlington Tesla Supercharger? There was this
one guy who
kept mugging and robbing Tesla owners. Mm-hmm. You can't leave. Like, you're plugged in. You're plugged in. Fair, you can't put it in drive.
To be fair, you shouldn't leave at a gas station. I mean, you could, but you could. It's not ideal.
The car is going to let you put the thing in drive, floor it, blow that place up, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah,
I think this is a edge case we don't necessarily need to worry about as much. I think a better solution is just putting them in safer areas.
No, I think it's going to be an issue. I think it's going to increasingly be more of an issue as people realize, hey, there's people with money, typically without, you know, return fire capabilities.
It's not true.
Generalizing
here. Liberals aren't big gun owners, I will admit.
Not there you go. So typically, although some might. And
watch out.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I've no problem. We'll go right at it. Let's do it. But here's the thing, like, that's sketchy.
It's both.
The locations are a lot of it, though, because I mean, so many of the stops that we have had are great. And I want to just touch on that point. You're talking about location selection. You know, EA rolled out really quickly, and so they picked, you know, partners like Walmart and Target and things like that. What's amazing is actually, in hindsight, how Tesla managed to build this network they have currently with individual stores and individual like mall owners and stuff. You know, you're not following this nationwide company where you've got a partnership with. That's kind of really shocking that the supercharging team at the time had the bandwidth for that. And it also explains why some things took like 3.5 years to get built, but you know.
Do you remember the early days? Like we would like see a Tesla supercharger go in and then it would wait for permitting and like they did the reverse. And so, oh man, I loved it so much. That was such a great time. And now I feel like, I had a conversation with the CEO of a major European charging company today for a podcast, a competitor podcast to ours. So I won't mention them. I'm just joking. It's the inside of these podcasts. You can listen to it. And it's starting to become a business case, DC fast charging. We're on the edge of it. I don't think in the US. In Europe, sure. But we're starting to see it. Now, the big question is, in the middle of the country at Walmarts, typically where I would say crime rate seems to be higher, you know, in certain areas, is safety enough of a factor to move a station somewhere else?
I think if it impacts customer experience enough, they would consider it, obviously. I mean, okay. Tesla has done this. We know that for a fact in North Carolina. Yep. There's a station that was not meeting owner experience.
Well, would you say they would sue you if you used their bathroom?
Yes, they wanted to sue anyone who used their restroom, which is quite good.
It was a disaster.
Until allegedly one person we knew said, what are you going to make me do, pee on your floor? And I believe threatened and might have followed through to do that from the sound of things.
It was the police were involved. We're not going to comment on the situation.
but she is a hero for that.
Yeah, I agree. She was badass. She was awesome. But the thing was, that became the elusive secret supercharger.
Off map, but worked. Yeah, that was awesome.
It was my secret to getting to Wilmington before Wallace was installed. So Warsaw came offline. They left the thing plugged in for all the OG owners. And anytime you had to go to like New Bern or something, I remember I had to take a Model X to New Bern once and I had to stop there. I pulled in with like 2 miles and you would never have any idea if today's the day they're ripping it out.
you could never plan it was there. Like you could go to Wilmington for a weekend and come back and it could have been gone. You know, it was on that level.
And remember there was a big storm once and we knew some people with a Model X 60D who had to tow their horses from a hurricane.
We had to
go to the supercharger. We don't know if it'll work.
we actually Tesla's charging like program team was helpful because they said they promised that would be active during that like evacuation period during the hurricane.
What an interesting time. I mean, we really that was
you know what? Shout out to Triangle Tesla owners for getting that word out to the community so that they knew they could take their cars with them on the evacuation.
That's gotta be
that was a really good grassroots thing.
That's one of the best Tesla owner groups. Zeb's done an amazing job with that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been to a lot of different Tesla owner meetups and groups, and a lot of them are going for this, like, I'm showing off my new lighted subwoofer installation and look at my, you know, bagged Model 3. But the thing that I like about the Triangle Tesla group is you could pull up there with a Taycan, you could pull up there with an EV6 or whatever, and they're just enthusiasts. They're tech enthusiasts. And I love all the people in that group. I think it's the best owner base in the country.
Very good.
And maybe I'm just biased because they're friends of mine. But
It's certainly a good community. I've seen some little bits and pieces of some other owners groups where it's just like who has the flashiest expensive wrap. And it's sort of like this, you know, oh, you don't have autopilot as if that's a bad thing, because that was the OG Tesla right there. That's kind of cool and honestly should be.
We should have do a podcast just on the early days of Tesla as we experienced it.
Yeah, it was such an amazing time.
I was thinking the same thing.
Company and like as an enthusiast.
It was a good time to be there.
Products.
It was exciting.
Model X 90, trying to get that places on 22-inch wheels. Ben, it's like kind of a fun challenge.
Ben, I saw your old Model X because there must only be one in the world set this way. But I couldn't quite get a picture. But it had the trailer hitch in it too with the ball. And it was Model X in titanium, 7-seat, on tan with black 22s and the hitch and the active spoiler.
Oh, I think when I got that car, I think we were looking and there was like, no match for it. I think that could have been it. Especially when you factor in active spoiler, because that was them for not
you
even.
You have to call the guy you sold it to, see where it is. It's on Colorado plates. I saw it here in town.
You know, his lease ended about a year ago. Yeah, or so
it's got to be somewhere.
It's out somewhere. I think they got a Model Y, so it is somewhere.
I'll find it.
Model X VIN number 800-1861. Anyone, if you know who has it, I'd love to hear how it's doing, and I'd love to know what warranty work has happened in between my and your current, because it went through a lot under mine as well. A seat, a drive unit, to name a few.
Door.
Whole cooling, door. Air conditioning.
That's I right. The air conditioning broke out.
It failed on 100 degree
on the hottest day ever.
Yeah, and Model X is not a great car to have an air conditioning failure in during the summer, because the windshield, while it does have tinting, you notice it the second the AC cuts out pretty quickly. Just get
hot. And it was really hot and muggy. That was a terrible.
We were taking it to the track, I think, too, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. I think we shouldn't comment on that. All right, let's talk about what else we did. Sorry to derail your EV6 road trip, Jordan.
No, that's all right. I mean, yeah, I got iced. That was funny. So that's the last.
Oh, nice.
So wow. Our listening audience, a plow plowed up snow in front of the Chargers and iced them.
Which was really funny, because there was so many other places the snow could have been. So it's like, yeah, he probably did it on purpose.
This
yeah.
always happens at the Wytheville, West Virginia Supercharger at that Holiday Inn. Every yes. time I've been there in
yep,
the winter,
I
it's
totally
like,
agree.
I'm backing up a Model X up on the snowbank to try and get it plugged in.
Well, really quick, let's talk about, before we go, Defender, because that's something fresh on my mind too, because we just spent some time with that yesterday as of recording this. And we had the Discovery last podcast. We talked about having that. So having them so close together, Kyle, do you still have that love for the Defender?
Yes.
That was a dumb question. Super dumb question. But this was an interesting spec, because it was all like,
wait, this was the worst spec, actually.
Interesting, but worst, yes.
It's just, I was going to say, yeah, like,
was it just all, I mean, it's just all white.
It had nothing, basically, exciting. But that's not the issue. It's like, so it had cooled seats, sunroof, and the extra cooler in the back, and they sent it to in the middle of winter to Colorado.
And it had none of the like hardcore off-roading things.
And no heated steering wheel. No heated windshield, no cold weather pack,
no terrain response
to. But even a Defender with none of that stuff will still do almost anything you throw at it. Realistically.
Yeah, it got me to work just fine, 2 miles down the pavement.
Discovery would have done that too, in more comfort.
How did it handle the really technical stuff, like the Starbucks drive-thru?
Yeah, so the 360 cam came in clutch when I was really getting the tire right up on the curve. Mm-hmm. The curb there, but I really wish it had trail turn assist, because it's quite a long wheelbase.
Yeah, no brake fade in the stop and go, you know, from the order window to the pickup window.
Great
right?
cup holders though for the Starbucks.
Yeah, oh yeah,
yep. Very good Starbucks cup holders. So what's interesting is I booked this Land Rover and I asked for it because I was like, oh, the Defender, I want to see the new screen. Let me see all the new stuff.
I know.
Yeah. And then it shows up and it's like, oh, we've already had a 2021 Defender 110 with the P400 engine. That was all the off-roady stuff and none of the hot weather stuff. And then I'm like, what do we do with this? Because we had that back when this vehicle was brand new. So we did everything with it. I did all the driving stuff. We did MPG testing. We did all of it. This did have the off-road tires on it, though, which was cool. And so I was like, I genuinely don't know what we've done everything. Like, why is this here? And so we made some cool TikToks, and we're doing like a buyer's guide for the Defender, which won't help you because you can't buy one anyway.
It's the hypothetical buyer's guide.
I guess,
but it's just an amazing car. There is nothing that comes close to this, because it's premium adventure, but not pretentious. So it's not a Range Rover where you're like, that guy just bought it because it's a Range Rover. You went out of your way to buy arguably the less comfortable one to go more off-road. And the only thing that's in this category is a Rivian R1S or R1T.
Mm-hmm. Adventure vehicles are, I mean, you could say 4Runner TRD Pro,
nope, premium kind of adventure.
Stuff like that, but they're not as nice.
They're not premium. They suck to be in. The interior suck. They drive like crap. They have no power.
Even Bronco is kind of an unpleasant road going experience.
Bronco's not premium. This is a whole nother level. And
I want one.
So I was doing research for this buyer's guide that we're putting together, and it sounds like you can't even, they're not even bringing any 4 cylinders in this year. Like no allocation for the U.S. market.
Wow.
And There's my friend is actually in the market for one of these. So she was down in she lives in Tampa, and she was looking at a Land Rover dealer, and there's $20,000 markup for every single one on the lot. And then it's like, if you want to order one, you're into 2020, end of 23.
Probably.
Yep. Just I mean, I don't even know if that buyer's guide is useful, because we're like, here's everything you should get, which you can't. Sorry.
Sure got, sure got me thinking. So here's my Land Rover.
If you're one of the six people who have snagged an allocation.
$80,000. You are out of your mind.
No, it's not even a V8.
I put everything I want on this thing.
The V8 starts at 100 grand, I think.
But you didn't get a contrasting roof color.
Yeah, nope. So you automatically...
So it's not a Defender. It's not a Defender unless it has a contrasting roof, sorry.
You need the white roof.
But Ben, remember on 2021 models, because I was actually very close to ordering one of these back then. And so we were going through, how do I spec this? And ended up waiting and then going with the Revel, which was a great decision, I think. But back when I was looking at buying one of these, you could not get an SE with the white roof. You remember that, Ben?
No, yeah, you were forced to get a black roof.
Yeah.
There's some weird trim level things on Land Rovers where... I think Land Rover just needs to fully commit to the Porsche model, which is don't bother with trims and you just make everything optional. And I get that, like, there's this image of doing that, which is like, wow, they're going to make me pay for everything. But, like, just let me pay for everything and then have what I want instead of make me have to make a compromise from one trim level to another to try and get the right color or combination. Like... Or there are, like, multiple interior color palettes that we liked that you couldn't do with this or that or the other because,
like, here's a good example.
Level separated.
I was building out a plug-in hybrid Range Rover the other day.
Yes. Because, again, so was car
I would actually buy. That's right up my alley. I'm a Range Rover guy. I'd rather have a Defender, but the plug-in hybrid sucks. So, like, here, you get a bit of electric driving. You cannot spec the good sound system, the big one, unless you get, like, an autobiography, which you can't get in the plug-in hybrid.
Nope.
It has to be short wheelbase. So it's impossible to get the good sound system in the one you want, which is
you get that 800-ish watt
Meridian. Yeah, but it's not the 2200
one. That's
blow
like
your eardrums out one.
But you don't know that this new one's not good.
I don't care. It's not the best
Range Rover audio system is not going to leave someone feeling like they're having a poor experience.
I would think about it. Every time I twist the volume knob, this is not the good sound system. I don't know why, but I always get the max sound system in whatever I order.
And a Toomey Gold.
And I listen, and I keep it off every time I drive the car. But I listen. When I do listen to it, I do crank it, though.
You really should. They're usually worth it. Other than the Honda Accord, not worth it.
Yeah, but our Model 3, by the way, I know you guys don't have yours anymore, but after the recent software update, is a amazing concert call now.
I've heard it's a lot better, actually.
Incredible.
I love software. I drove Model S Plaid again recently, just because you can when they're available.
What'd you think?
And I, well, at 30% state of charge, not impressive at all. I'll tell you that much.
You mean like not impressive at all compared to it fully charged, but still a rocket ship?
I know, I find it hard to believe it wouldn't be fast.
Honestly, it felt inconsistent at times. Like, it felt like it was going to give it, gave really good, 60-mile-an-hour runs, but, if you're on the highway, it just didn't really feel like it had a lot. Like, it's interesting how it loses that, unrelenting power at speed, more so than 0 to 60, it felt like, which was kind of odd. And then I had an owner who shared their Taycan Turbo S with me, and that car was at, 80 miles projected remaining. So that's, 40% probably. And that thing ripped pretty good. And I think it launches more violently. Okay, it's not faster, obviously. But I think that'd be a good thing to measure, just the jerk factor of the G-force is interesting. Because the Tesla does it really smoothly, which is kind of fun. But also, the Taycan Turbo S launch is sort of you're getting rear-ended.
No one can beat Tesla's drivetrain tuning.
No, they've really smoothed it out at this point.
It's insanely magical. Cool.
Even in my Taycan, I noticed creeping on a kind of steep hill. If there's a wall here and I want to creep up close to it, it's kind of hard. It wants to go into hold mode and kind of
got to feel it. Does this thing where the brake pedal isn't so immediate at low speed either? I mean, you come off and it, and then you're on the brakes.
Yeah, it's. I wish it didn't have creep almost, so that I could be fully precise with it. Small thing, because you don't run into it all that often, but it's interesting to see those tuning differences. It also is like much smoother overall in every other area. So it's kind of how they've, you know, I think Tesla really calibrated a car perfectly for LA traffic, where you, you need that smoothness.
So I went up to this really secretive, cool winter test facility in northern upper peninsula of Michigan, looking at Canada right on the border. Mm-hmm. And we were, you know, they have these banks that are split mu. So you have, you know, pavement on one side, ice on the other. And then they have another one that is pavement, ice, pavement going up. And I was like, why would you care about that? And then it occurred to me, in a dual motor all-wheel drive system where the primary drive is connected and the secondary drive is disconnected, like the like EV6 and Ioniq 5, it has to, even under creep, connect the front motor. And so the Magna invited me up there. They're a great company. They make the front motor for the Volkswagen ID4 all-wheel drive. And so we jumped in one of those and we put it in creep and climbed this crazy incline, and the front motor ran over, didn't kick on because we're still rear wheel drive on concrete. As soon as the rear wheels hit, instantly front motor connected and then just kept the exact same torque load pulling us forwards. It was so impressive. And it's something I've never really thought about before.
When you say connected, does it decouple like with a clutch pack? No,
not in the ID4, but it does shift on and off because it's an asynchronous induction motor.
Oh, so it's just asleep. It's not. Ioniq
5 and EV6, it physically disconnects with a clutch.
Wow.
Yeah, that, which
is
they
that
also
one of the
make
only
a version.
EVs?
No, Taycan.
That does that? I Taycan guess technically does it for Taycan motor. Does it for the rear motor, but
and there will be more because Magna is now offering a disconnecting permanent magnet solution or a torque sleep induction motor.
Very fascinating. Yeah, so we're going to see a lot more stuff with this. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So
Tesla's
really
been
cool.
Very much a dual. Well, they've done a permanent magnet in the rear or as the primary drive typically, mm-hmm. and they're kind of just moving that around and having one of each. Although they used to have two induction motors back
but,
in the day.
Yeah, so with two permanent magnet motors, you need the clutch because that's the only way to get efficiency.
There's no torque sleep on those motors.
Right, because the magnets, the rare earth magnets are in the rotor, and so they're always excited, permanently excited. And then you need to apply torque to smooth them out, or you just disconnect the whole thing. So that's mm-hmm. the way to do it. So went up there, drove a Model S prototype from 2015 that was a three-motor car. Really cool, good drivetrain tuning. This was not for Tesla. This was for them to showcase their drivetrain technology. Have a whole video of that up there. It was amazing. And then also drove this truck called the Intelligent Force e-beam axle thing. And
rolls right off the tongue.
Yep. But so they're
it's very
presenting
cool looking.
Their rear axle, which is made for body on frame. Non-independent suspension, you know, real heavy-duty truck stuff.
Yeah,
to basically slap in and handle consistent towing under, you know, sort of constant high throttle loads without derating. So, really impressive heavy-duty powertrain option. It was hard to really evaluate the motor and its performance since we were at a winter testing facility on ice, but did a lot of drifting and that was fun.
Useful.
Yep.
That's an interesting product because if you take looking at a solid axle that you can just bolt into a truck, it's not so much for a consumer pickup truck as all those like delivery vans you see and like ambulances, whatever it is. There's so many things that are built on these heavy duty truck platforms that you could theoretically easily electrify.
Potentially upfitters, like a company like Lightning eMotors might use this solution. But also the OEMs, you know, eventually probably GMC, Ford, Ram are going to offer a heavy duty city EV truck, garbage trucks, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what this
food
truck is designed for.
Food trucks should be electric. This is
anything
a good idea.
Heavy and that goes around the city, which most heavy things are not going long distance unless you're talking semis. And so it's the perfect solution. It's the right product at the right time. And I was really lucky to meet all the engineers who worked on it, who were all awesome dudes. And they know their stuff. We nerded out. We talked about everything and had such a great time ripping with the driving engineers. We had it was so funny. You know, they I don't think they expected media to like know how to drive or anything. So they're like, here's what you do. And I'm like, okay, thanks so much. And then we were just like ripping all day. It was the best thing ever. So much fun.
It's like the grandfather of the Model S Plaid. So what kind of tires were on these cars?
Each one had different. The ID4 was just stock Pro S all-wheel drive. I think they literally bought on the Volkswagen dealer on the way up there. And that's what they did with most of these things, actually. Like, all of their demonstrator vehicles were showcasing their technology. Like, they make the GM transfer case that has four-wheel drive high, four-wheel drive auto. And so we talked a lot about how they do their four-wheel drive auto tuning. And basically, I didn't know this, but you know, if you get into a Suburban or any whatever GM truck, the way they tune their front to rear torque distribution is so if you're sliding, you can neutral steer it and still continue on the same radius. So very rear.
Wow, cool.
How about that? They, you know, Magna designed for Matic and X-Drive, so they know a thing or two about this stuff. And so I was just blown away by the whole experience. I will say, though, it took 3 days of traveling for 10 minutes in the truck I was supposed to drive. It was actually not 9 minutes, of return. But whatever.
Wow. Well, we're a little bit over time, but definitely worth it. We didn't get to talk about the Maverick much, although we haven't spent much time with it. But spoiler alert, it's really good. And so stay tuned for the
Maverick hybrid. Look, the lights are telling Kyle it's time to leave.
Yeah,
I got to go to the airport.
Kyle's got to catch a flight.
Late. Yeah, you need to go.
But yeah, we'll have more on the Maverick later. And be sure to check out all of our videos on Out of Spec Reviews and the road trip and Out of Spec Motoring. Lots of fun stuff over there. And yeah, thanks everyone for joining. And we'll catch you all next time.